We are continuing now with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 121B, and we're on page 463, and we've been looking at the important diagram, I suppose, on page, where is it, 460 or so? Yes. This diagram, which graphs the relationship between the three divine aspects, beginning with the emanating point, creating a receptive point, and then a magnetic center, and finally an embodiment for all of those energies, and the return of the energy to the receptive point, which becomes downwardly receptive, and re-energizing of the magnetic center, which comes into ever deeper rapport with the receptive center. So this responsive center here, responsive center, and the receptive center, and then returns everything that has been gained in the lower worlds to the monad or emanating center. This is an archetypal process, and DK tells us it operates for the human being, for the planetary logos, for the systemic life, the solar logos, and for greater beings still, cosmic beings and so forth. This particular diamond and its flows are descriptive of the way energy descends and returns over great periods of time, even in the case of the human being, relatively a great period of time, compared to the span of its life in any one incarnation. So DK is telling us here that it must be noted by the student that the masses of men express downpouring energy from the magnetic center. Their rightful trend is at present downward into physical manifestation and experience, and they are not treading the path of return. Whoop, planet of origin? No. Path of return. Even though archetypally and in terms of purpose, all sides of the triangle are simultaneously functioning, especially the upper triangle, in the eternal now, as DK says, from the perspective of the logos who sees the end and the beginning as one. Yet in time and space and in our developmental process, there are some people who are involved strictly with the creation and recreation of the personality from the magnetic center. They are on the clockwise wheel, and their objective is experience in the lower three worlds. Their objective is not yet return. They have not experienced the reversal of the wheel. And, you know, if you're looking at this diagram, this particular arrow from the distributing center towards the evocative center again represents the reversal of the wheel. Of course, in a way, the downward pointing arrow is still operating, and a man is, from the wheel analogy, turning in two directions simultaneously. Not yet in all directions simultaneously. But there's a rending process as flows of energy are counteracting each other. And sometimes with a fourth-ray type, you really see this in a pronounced way. You see the, as St. Paul described, condition of wretchedness in which the aspirations are countered by instinctual attractions, which would bring the man, carry the man deeper into form. But that is not the case once the wheel has finally been reversed and when the initiatory process has made it possible to clear the myopic, glamorous, and illusory obstructions. Aspirants and probationers express responsiveness to the pull of the evocative center. Their urge is towards the path of return. So it's a double thing that's going on here. The evocative center is urging a return and magnetically attracting, and at the same time, it's invoking the immersed consciousness, immersed in the dense physical vehicle, which in evocative response to that invocation is aspiring. So another thing that we're not really being shown in this triangle is that in a way there is a process, there's a return arrow here in a way, as the influence of the receptive center descends towards the embodiment of all these qualities in the distributing center. This is what DK seems to be saying. It's responsive to the pull of the evocative center. How should we describe that pull? We can ask, should this pull be expressed as a downward pointing arrow, or is the upward pointing arrow sufficient to indicate both the pull and aspiration? Well, what happens is that the solar angel, once the fifth petal process is begun, begins to turn its meditative attention towards its shadow, its instrument, and there is an upward pull. And this invocation that is going downward, as invocations can go downward as well as upward, stimulates a response in the qualified personality to reach towards the source of the pull. And there is an urge within them, probably ultimately stimulated by the spirit, which will not tolerate being other than it is for long. Their urge is on the path of return. Accepted disciples and initiates express interplay along the baseline between the evocative and magnetic points. So what becomes clear is that DK has not really drawn this diagram in such a way that all the dynamics involved in all stages of the process are shown. Some of them are shown, but that interplay along the baseline could easily be shown as a returning arrow. But it would be confusing if we put this in here unless we connect that returning arrow with a particular stage of development, namely accepted discipleship. So let's just say that this may require a returning arrow, giving a rapport or increasing rapport with the soul, or receptive, evocative, force center. So the aspirant reaches upward and has not yet achieved any kind of level where there can be constant interplay with the evocative center, the center of crisis. But the accepted disciple and the initiate has achieved a kind of level in which soul infusion is possible. And as I said, you know, the disciple per se is found at the magnetic point. The disciple. The disciple is different from the personality. The disciple is a point midway between the soul and personality. So the magnetic point, in a sense, becomes the disciple after there is sufficient development, and then that interplay exists along the baseline between the soul on its own plane and the soul-infusing personality, soul-infused personality, who is the disciple. It's more the qualified mental consciousness which is here at work. It's an interplay on the plane of mind, in a way. That's what's happening here. It's almost like the higher mind and the lower mind, the higher three subplanes and the focus on the fourth subplane are interplaying at this particular stage. Yes, higher initiates and masters utilize and express the energy blended in the magnetic center. They are returning or responding to the emanating center. Well, let's just say that even advanced disciples are attempting to do this, but the higher initiates and masters are actually working along that line of return. And I suppose, again, you know, there could be another arrow which is not shown. If they were shown perhaps in color, maybe the color red descending, the color blue ascending, color green here descending, sort of a bluish color ascending, and maybe two blue arrows here on the baseline, red descending here as well. So the actual diagram is more complicated than we have it, than we see it, than is presented. So there is this blended magnetic energy, and I, you know, what can we call this? This is soul infusion. The energy blended in the magnetic center. It is energy of the soul, and through the soul, some energy of the emanating center. Because the jewel in the lotus, which is part of the evocative, or let's call receptive center, comes from the emanating center. So there is, in soul infusion, there is some of the energy of the spirit, especially as that soul infusion increases. And then from that center, they will return to the emanating center. Now, what happens once the fourth initiation is taken? What is the magnetic center? Is it even needed? Or is there a body of fire somehow created out of what was the receptive center and the responsive center together? And perhaps this body of fire is basically the fiery body of the fiery worlds of the spiritual triad and is sent into the lower worlds at will. I guess I could draw this, you know, in some way. I wonder if there's not a point that is the emanating point, and then below it, a triad of will, wisdom, and activity, or at least of Atmabuddhi and Manas, which generates, in reflection, a lower triangle. And eventually, as I say, it may simply be a straight line in which all the factors of the spiritual triad are found upon that line, and even they will be retracted into the monad at a certain point. Thus, the sixfold triangle, objective and subjective, is created, even though there are only apparently four points. So, in this arrangement, the sixfold triangle is seen as a fourfold diamond. The same points can have different functions. At first, the receptive center is simply that. It is a receiver, and it transmits what it has been received. Later, it is one that calls upon what has been created below and calls for a return. At first, the magnetic center simply generates, under the impress of the two superior energies, a vehicle which can appear in the lower worlds. Later, that magnetic center is a means of return, reaching towards the emanating center, but of course in full awareness. It will be, of course, obvious to you that it will not be possible to deal with all the various triangles. Oh, he's changing the subject now. Okay, so this is, in a way, you know, the end of this description of the interrelationship of the three points and their relation to a fourth and manifesting point. And this he has already discussed in some significant sense. We will see some of the triangles with a triangle hovering above a lower point. All right, so he's changing the subject a little bit, or at least carrying it, standing back for a moment and giving us a perspective, that it will be, of course, obvious to you that it will not be possible to deal with all the various triangles of energy which are effective on our Earth, and which, incidentally, affect humanity exhaustively. I guess what he's saying here is that Earth and its wholeness comes first, before the effect upon humanity. Their name is Legion. Many, many. But certain triangular relationships can be tentatively considered, because we cannot understand the whole of them, so we sort of touch upon them in a cautious manner. And their place in the planetary or the individual horoscope can be later worked out. DK is certainly planting the seeds here for greater realization. And in time and space, and under Saturn in sequence, what the seeds can grow and the suggestions can be applied. They can be seen to be working out. In the new astrology, which will be that of the soul, eventually of the soul on its own plane, and certainly on plane, and eventually then of the, and now, of the soul as it expresses through the personality. In the new astrology, which will be that of the soul, the paramount consideration of the 12 houses, which are now of such importance, will be less emphasized, though it doesn't say they will not be emphasized, but at least less emphasized. And the consideration of the three crosses will emerge in their place, because we will be dealing with consciousness first. We will be dealing with consciousness. And then with being as it expresses through consciousness. So the houses are more material areas of expression. They are more objective. They have to do with circumstances, not just on the physical plane, but on other planes. And the crosses have to do with the energies which sometimes generate those circumstances or work through them. These three crosses make together 12 arms, and it is the energy flowing through the 12 arms and their place in the soul horoscope which will assume the major importance. And already there are some very good astrologers who are working in this way. Let's see if we can. No. That's not going to allow me to do that. We have Stephen Pugh, who is one of the pioneers here in the charts of the crosses. We have Nicholas Nilén and others who also emphasize the crosses. The full way of understanding the crosses is not yet given to us. That's pretty clear. But at least we can begin to think in terms of energies rather than of the forms which attract and contain and sometimes entrap those energies. He says, this I will enlarge upon when we take up the theme of the three crosses. The 12 houses concern the personality. And even if they relate to the astral body to a degree and to the mental plane to a degree, those subtler factors are still aspects of the personality. So just because the thing is more subtle than the material realm, it doesn't mean it doesn't belong to the personality. The four arms of the three crosses concern the soul. And it is these 12 and their appearance in the horoscope, or their failure to appear, which will govern the horoscope of the soul. Well, what does it mean by failure to appear? I mean, we don't necessarily have all the... It's difficult to have all of the different signs available. I suppose the ideal horoscope somehow, finally, is to have all the signs of the zodiac active with the ruling planet in each one of the signs. I'm not even sure that that's even possible astronomically. I haven't worked that out, but that would be the archetypal condition. Someone in whom all four arms of each cross were represented, but of course, you know, according to the ray of the individual and the status, different crosses will be more important than others. So in the case of the high initiate, the cardinal cross would be most important, and for the disciple, the fixed. And then for the average individual, more the mutable cross, but it's not so cut and dried and not so easy. So the four arms of the three crosses concern the soul, or at least the soul as it expresses in incarnation. And these 12 arms and their appearance in the horoscope, or their failure to appear, it is these which will govern the horoscope of the soul. It's so difficult when he says horoscope of the soul, because does he mean that ongoing consciousness within the causal body, or does he mean that consciousness as it is immersed in particular vehicles and circumstances in the lower three worlds in any one incarnation? As I've sometimes said, what do? Do we go back to the very moment of individualization and determine the horoscope of the soul? Or do we look at those particular points when, as subsidiary points, when new root races were entered, or new sub-races or branch races were entered? These are all perhaps subsidiary horoscopes of the soul. But maybe when the descending monad, the moment when the descending monad found its causal vehicle, or stimulated the creation of that vehicle, maybe it's from there that we would measure the horoscope of the soul. Right now, I don't think that's practical for us. What is practical is to understand how the soul is attempting to work out within the various personality vehicles, and what impulses and energies and forces which we experience have their origin in the soul and its intention, and which are those that are strictly arising from within the personality. All four influences of the three, permanent, of the three crosses, this must be something that was inserted at some time. I'm not sure what this means. All three influences of the three, permanent atoms, the three. Well, I'm not sure about this there. All the four influences of the three crosses will be found present in the chart of the master. And I'm just going to erase this other factor. And I would say whether or not there are planets in each arm of the cross, of each cross. Because right now, as we consider planets, it's unlikely that there will be tenanted each arm of the cross with a significant planet. I mean, when it comes to asteroids and planetoids and lesser bodies, I'm sure we can all find something in each arm of the cross, but those factors are really subsidiary compared to that of the major 10 or even 12 planets eventually. Therefore, an indication of which constellations are primarily related to the unfoldment of consciousness and to the evolution of spiritual understanding is of significant use here. And by constellations, I assume he means zodiacal in this context. And there are some, apparently, primarily related to the unfoldment of consciousness, and others, and to the evolution of spiritual understanding. I'm remembering when he talked about the seven constellations between Cancer and Capricorn, including Capricorn. He also referred to five particular constellations just a little while ago. They included Pisces and Capricorn, sort of moving backwards. I think Scorpio, and I suspect it was Leo and Cancer. And then all the others had a more planetary significance. He frames and reframes the function of constellations from different perspectives at different times. The same constellation can play a different part in a different grouping of constellations. But he seemed to talk about five that were particularly related to the unfoldment of human consciousness. I don't want to go back now and start looking through this. It's in one of the earlier programs. But now he will develop this subject. We're looking for the constellations. Which ones are primarily related to the unfoldment of consciousness? But when you think about it, you know, Cancer has everything to do with the individualization moment, and so does Leo, for that matter. But then the development of self-consciousness is followed. Then the growth of soul consciousness proceeds and is fought out in the sign Scorpio, and soul consciousness achieves a triumph in Capricorn, and then in Pisces, it becomes the consciousness of the spirit and the saviorship, or the complete dedication of that which was created to a world purpose, to a much larger purpose, much larger than that of the sustainment and aggrandizement of the individual. Well, as I say, you know, when we look at a constellation, we can't say it's only one thing. It will be found in different groupings. And in these different groupings, in these combinations and permutations, constellations will play different roles. And, you know, keeping some of these in mind is the important thing. You know, as I said, He talked about Cancer, Leo, Aquarius. There's a triangle. It has a lot to do with the unfoldment of human consciousness, because we have the mass consciousness leading to individual consciousness and finally to group consciousness, which develops its own kind of universality as it moves into the sign Pisces. But that is one important triangle. And we have, you know, you can begin to pull these triangles together and find significance. Look at Leo, Scorpio, and Capricorn, for instance. Here is the growing individual, growing as a powerful personality, but also one who is beginning to tread the path of initiation. And then all of that is tested out. And the lower ego is put to death in the next sign, Scorpio, which makes it possible for the higher ego to ascend to the mountaintop, or to the human being under the influence of the higher ego to ascend to the mountaintop and to achieve the triumph of the soul. DK has given us enough descriptors, simple descriptors of the different astrological factors, so that if we were to look at various triangles, we might be able to determine their function. Now, of course, we'd have to revolve the different points, but what we would be most interested in is the final function, what they are meant to produce after all of the changes have occurred. Really a fascinating subject of the cooperation of high entities who are moving the entire planet and other receptive centers towards their fulfillment. The zodiac of constellations helps to move the planets along, but it also helps to move the local stars along as well, just like the 12 parts of the heart and the head center, each one of them representing one of the signs of the zodiac, can be seen to be influentially directing the lesser centers. So we have a tremendous microcosmic interplay, which is reflecting the greater macrocosmic interplay. And we have to study each constellation of the zodiac. From a number of angles, because its function will constantly change depending upon the grouping in which it is being considered. As I said once long ago, in the days when one could maybe dictate into some sort of machine, which looks very unwieldy now compared to what we have, I used to take long walks and even runs and so forth, and list all the triangles, or at least I got started listing all the triangles in the zodiac. Like I say, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Aries, Taurus, Cancer, blah, 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 and so forth, and so forth. And try to see their significance. Now, obviously, I was guilty of not attending to the most important triangles, but just trying to see what the diversity might indicate. When it comes to planetary interrelationships, we also have some that are more important than others, but every planet will find its place in relation to combinations of two other planets, no matter what those other two may be. Within our solar system, it's a group entity, and the lives within the solar system are major lives are the planetary lives, and they do have a complete interrelationship with the other beings, the other planets, two at a time. The major cosmic triangles work primarily through six constellations at this time. And again, at this time, the cosmic constellation and the two zodiacal energies focus through a particular planet, using it as a transmitting agency to the Earth. I think this will have to take us to page 465, where we will see the figure that is being discussed. Aha, an important one. Now it seems that I cannot excise this figure. I don't know the means of doing it, but you will notice that this triangle, the major triangle and the subsidiary triangles, are very much the same as what we have in the tabulation on page 50. Tabulation number 3, and they are not listed in the same order. Here they're, interestingly enough, the order has changed, because Sirius and the Great Bear are seen as the vertical aspect, and the Pleiades are found off to the right, and we'll look at that in just a minute, but everything else is pretty well the same. So we'll go back here to page 465. We'll look at the figure. Sirius is at the top, interestingly enough. The Pleiades seem to be assuming this position at the point. I think the way the graphics are, they've done what they can to make it neat and readable. The Great Bear is on the bottom, and perhaps this is a triangle in rotation. In the tabulation I just showed you on page 50, the Great Bear comes second in order, and the Pleiades third. The constellations, zodiacal constellations through which the working occurs are the same. Sirius works through Cancer and Capricorn, which are the two gates and have to do both with the individualization process and with the initiation process. And Saturn is the ruler of Capricorn and is the distributing planet here. The Pleiades in the second place now, but, you know, outside in a way of the alignment, the direct alignment between Sirius and the Great Bear, because that is how it looks. Assyrian and Great Bear alignment, the second aspect on the first. Sirius represents the second aspect, the Pleiades generally the third, and the Great Bear the first. Yes, we are told that the Pleiades do work through Gemini and Sagittarius. I believe, let's take a look here quickly and see how this works. Sirius works through, yes, and Pleiades for Gemini and Sagittarius, yes, and the Great Bear for Aries and Libra, and the Sun is veiling Vulcan here. So we'll go back to 465. It's the best way I can do it, because I can't excise that. The Great Bear works through Aries and Libra, and the Sun, it doesn't say veiling Vulcan, but we assume that that is the case. So the initiatory, the higher initiates seem to be concerned with this triangle of Aries, Libra, and the Sun, the disciples with Gemini, Sagittarius, and Mercury, and those of lesser degree and average man with Cancer, Capricorn, and Saturn. I probably discussed all this long ago when I first entered that page 50. Now we're on page 465. It's a long time ago. But we'll see if anything additional usefully can be added. The major cosmic triangle works primarily through six constellations at this time. The major cosmic triangle. Now, this is interesting because we just had three constellations at this time. And I want to put that in. When we studied the 18-fold chart, we had the three major constellations working through three zodiacal constellations. We had them working through the Great Bear, Pisces, and Capricorn. In this series, Capricorn is included. Pisces is not, and Leo is not. So we're being told something different, but probably in a different context. The major cosmic triangle works primarily through six constellations at this time, and again at this time, the cosmic constellation and two zodiacal energies focus through a particular planet using it as the transmitting agent to Earth. So the cosmic constellation are Great Bear. Well, let's put them in order, how he does it. Sirius, Pleiades, Great Bear. And as we've seen, Sirius works through Cancer and Capricorn. Pleiades works through Gemini and Sagittarius. Great Bear works through Aries and Libra. And for Sirius, it's finally Saturn, which is actually one of the three planets which does distribute the Sirian energy, very connected with the Sirian law of karma, isn't it? Although both Uranus and Neptune are added as distributors. Pleiades is working through Mercury. And we saw that earlier in the triangle that was in the 18-fold chart we've been studying extensively, because there was a Pleiades-Capricorn-Mercury connection. So even though we have two other arms of the mutable cross, Gemini and Sagittarius here, and not Pisces, Mercury is still the planet. So is still the planet, as was the case in the 18-fold chart. And Sirius was working through Uranus, but now Saturn is here, and the Great Bear was working through Leo, and now is working through another one of those signs in which the sun is powerful, Aries, and is polar opposite Libra, with the sun veiling Vulcan on the first ray and carrying the first ray from the Great Bear. And this is the figure, which I cannot transpose into the working text, but we can go back and forth, and if you want to study it, just freeze your screen, you know, just put it on pause, and you can check this out. And obviously, there is a triangle between Saturn, Mercury, and Vulcan, isn't there? And we have a six-fold relationship, which may end up generating one of those seals of Solomon, one of those six-pointed stars, and a triangle over here. So four triangles are found here. And if we include the triangle that may appear here between Saturn, Mercury, and Vulcan, namely a third ray, fourth ray, and first ray triangle, we have yet another. So we have looked at the figure. These six influences, what are the six? Six constellations. those are the influences. These six influences, let's call them the six constellations, aid greatly in the development of self-consciousness and later in spiritual, later that of spiritual consciousness. One of them is a subjective, two of them are subjective constellations, Aries and Gemini, and are preparatory to incarnation. Capricorn, a sign of initiation, Sagittarius of aspiration, leading to real initiation. Libra, a sign of decision, but also a sign connected with Shambhala and with consummation. Both Aries and Libra can be directly connected with Shambhala. Libra is the royal road into Shambhala, sort of a sign which rules the central path of Sushumna, and there is a connection with Shambhala, Aries, Pluto, Shambhala. But here we have actually Vulcan instead. Okay, so they aid greatly in the development of self-consciousness. Ambition in Capricorn and one-pointed effort in Sagittarius, integrating effort, and later spiritual consciousness in the man who succeeded in reaching the point of reorientation upon the great wheel, and we might say that then after the fifth petal is organized and stimulated, or stimulated and organized. I deal not here with the personality influences, inclinations and determinations as they appear in the chart of the ordinary man. So we have to realize what we're leaving out of the picture. I deal with the influences and with those determining energies which pour upon the man who is on the path of return to the center of his life, at first the soul, and therefore with the final three stages upon the path of evolution, path of aspiration, path of discipleship, path of initiation, and the path of initiation. Okay, and now we will examine closely what these forces actually are and how they work. And here we're entering more deeply into the process than we did before. The Cancer Capricorn Saturn triangle, which is an expression of Sirian energy, enable the aspirant, this is who we're concerned with, to tread the path of purification and of probation. Well, there is much testing under Saturn, and Sirius is the one who, as it has been said, makes the mundane holy. And also, Sirius is the purifier. Now, you know, the energies coming out of Shambhala, in a way, can be considered to be purification, destruction, and organization. Sirius is the great scorcher, the purifier, the one who burns away all that is impure, all that is evil. There is no evil, we have been told, as we understand evil, within the sunshine of that greater sun. These energies focus and qualify the energy of the great lodge of the Most High in that distant sun. And now the Most High is not anymore Sanat Kumara. It's something more. Sometimes Most High is called Sanat Kumara, but that's in the planetary context. Not SK. The Most High is qualified as the Great Lodge of the Most High. Probably it is the one about whom is our local Most High Lord. But there is a great being, of course, working through Sirius. But the superlative is used here, the word most, so perhaps within the context of the seven solar systems, Sirius might be considered the most high, but within the context of all those cosmic logoi, it is not. Those cosmic logoi, which are chakras in the one about whom not may be said. They pour through the hierarchy upon the mass of men. Mass, because that's cancer. Cancer, the mass. Okay, not black. And enable the unit of the mass to isolate himself and turn his back upon the past. And that isolation will be an integrative process, a self-determining, self-directing process under Leo, and turn his back upon the past and find his way onto that section of the path where he learns to feel. Leo has so much to do with sensitivity. And Sirius is cosmic Camelomanus. So instead of a hardened individual, as some Capricornian types are, the feeling of cancer will be there. And there is a sense concerning cancer, let isolation rule, and yet the crowd exists. But we're talking about an isolation in individuality. Isolated individuality, isolated identity, and finally isolated unity. Let's see where those are found and which is which. Identity. Isolated identity. And I oftentimes get things confused. Which starts it? I know isolated. Between the stages of isolated individuality and isolated unity lies one of isolated identity. I'm just going to, it is the stage, with this stage we are concerned and its esoteric implications. Isolated unity describes the stage which the master's reached. Isolated individuality is the disciple, and isolated identity with the soul is that of the disciple up to and including the third initiation. So that is important in discipleship in the New Age. Volume 1, page 717. I kind of want to put that in. Dina 1, 717. Okay, so he isolates himself, but I think not in the sense yet of isolated identity, but more in the sense of something a little less than isolated individuality. Anyway, he begins that process of isolated individuality, and he can turn his back on the mass. So it's almost like when you look at this diagram, you get an intervening sign of Leo, moving from Cancer to Leo to Capricorn. And I may have mentioned that triangle, maybe not, but it shows three stages of consciousness, the mass, the individual, and the one who is initiate and who has entered into group consciousness. The Capricornian consciousness on the higher turn of the spiral is group consciousness. On the lower turn, it can simply be isolated ambition. So we'll keep this, try to keep that in a good place. So these energies focus and qualify the energy of the Great Lodge of the Most High, right? They pour through the hierarchy upon the mass of men. Cancer, the mass. And eventually they make it possible for the individual, because let's just put it like this. Feeling is necessary if there is to be group consciousness. Otherwise, we remain unaffected, and what happens to others is not as if it happens to ourselves. Then we have Gemini, Sagittarius, Mercury, which is the expression of the Pleiades. So this last one, has been the mass of men. The mass of men. We could also perhaps relate it to aspirants, but DK seems to be taking a slightly different arrangement here. Gemini, Sagittarius, Mercury, which are expression of the Pleiades, enable the probationary disciple, yes, to pass on to the path of accepted discipleship. So perhaps what we're doing here is, in under Sirius, Cancer, Capricorn, Saturn, we're moving from the personality consciousness of the mass into probationary discipleship. Now we have probationary discipleship. We're going to move on to accepted discipleship. Interesting enough that Mercury, whoop, that's not it. Interesting enough, I'll put it over here. No, it's not working. So I guess what I have to do is do it that way. That Mercury is a planet of discipleship with Saturn. And what have we got mentioned so far? We have Mercury, we have Saturn and Mercury, we have Sirius and the Pleiades. In this case, the Pleiades is outward and is not on the direct line from Sirius to the Great Bear. Sirius, then, is interestingly playing a kind of monastic role here, with the Pleiades playing the second aspect role, and the Great Bear the first aspect role. And that's reasonable enough, because the Pleiades does have a great deal of cosmic booty working through it, coming from the dragon. And, you know, like I said, on page 1162 of Cosmic Fire, there's this discussion of cosmic booty related to the Pleiades. In this particular case, it seems to be not upholding the third aspect position, but Sirius in its more monastic quality, which it does have through its fifth ray, is upholding the more mental position and the Great Bear the will position, and that's why they're in a line here with each other. With the soul off to the side, which the Pleiades at this point represents. Interesting how everything is in mutation, everything is in fluctuation. Whoops. Okay. Now, I know I just copied this, and it comes from a different place altogether. So I don't want it to be part of this show. Accepted discipleship. Okay. Now, going back to the document, it ends with where he learns to see. And it begins with Gemini, Sagittarius, and are the expression of the Pleiades. And after the word accepted discipleship, we have, I just want to separate this, the relation of the mother aspect. That's it. Okay. We'll find that. Sorry for the little delay here. Here it is. And I'll make this other thing, smaller. And like that. And I'll give it a different color altogether so we will not get confused. All right. Give it a little green. So we were in Dyna 1, 717. The relation of the mother aspect is embodied in the Pleiades and of the Christ child, hidden within the form of the personality, is realized. Interesting, there are these dualities that come in with Gemini, the mother and the Christ child, the two types of twins. Or we can even say that the the Christ child is more Geminian, and the Sagittarius is more related to the third aspect of divinity, but that interconnection is realized by the disciple, and the interplay between them is realized under Mercury. The spiritual man institutes the process of initial identification with the spiritual entity on its own plane. So it's moving towards soul consciousness. The little self begins to react consciously and with increasing frequency to the higher self. So let's call this Geminian interplay and Mercurian interplay. The man presses forward on that path wherein he learns to see. Well, that is such a Sagittarian statement. A strongly Sagittarian statement. Pressing forward and learning to see and traveling the path, all of that has to do with Sagittarius. So in this case, the Pleiades are not simply regarded as something which concerns the third aspect. No, there's more to it. The second aspect is included, and when you really look at the Pleiades, they are a strong blend of the second and third aspect. They may play the role of the first aspect to our local cosmos system, and to what extent the first ray may be involved with them, I don't really and fully know, but there's no question that representing the Deva Kingdom as they do, they have a strong second aspect, third aspect, and second aspect, just as the Deva Kingdom does, with man somehow combining the second and the first. I have all that in my Cosmic Fire commentaries. It's hundreds of pages. One would just have to find it, which could take a whole day. So you just have to take my word for it here and look up in Cosmic Fire about the different aspects that concern the Deva Kingdom and the human kingdom. All right, we have reached another point, and this is the end of Esoteric Astrology number 121b. I think that's as far as I'll take it for the moment. 466. And beginning, burning ground indeed, beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 122a on page 466. And maybe when I come back, I will review this section on the Pleiades and through Gemini and Sagittarius, but the path is at work. Now, we could be thinking that the first one deals with a probationary path, the second with the true path of discipleship. Interestingly, maybe only for the accepted disciples, Saturn and Mercury are the two rulers, but we are talking about going onto the path of discipleship, all the disciplines required to be applied by the one on the path of probation, leading to the illumination of the path of accepted discipleship. And now we'll deal with initiation. So I'll come back and I will review that in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 122. And meanwhile, farewell. We'll see you shortly. Okay, bye-bye.